You're with Bush Telegraph here on ABC Radio National on this Friday, and my name's Michael McKenzie. This is one of my favourite parts of any week, because you can forget the raging political debates in Canberra. It's the coriander herb that's really the issue splitting our nation down the middle. You either love coriander or you loathe it. There's no in-between. There's no middle ground on this. And today on Food on Friday, we take a look at the controversial herb. Why is there a love-hate? We'll talk to the CSIRO about the taste and the oppositions on our taste buds in some cases. Every part of the coriander can be used, from the leaves to the roots, from the stalks to the seeds.
Well, it's harvest time in the Kimberley's Ord Valley, and that sound, the hum of a header, it is common right across the valley as growers get stuck into their crops of chia, chickpeas, rice, or in this case, we're actually harvesting up a crop of coriander. The man driving this massive machine today is local grower Fritz Bolton. Fritz, can you just tell us about the average day for people like yourself during the harvest period?
Yeah, we start first thing in the morning. We service up the machines. Probably the day starts with looking at the weather forecast. Probably about 8:30 in the morning we can start harvesting, depending a bit on the crop and the humidity.
We're harvesting coriander at the moment. That's not a well-known crop in the Ord.
No, and I've never grown it either.
It smells fantastic. You can actually smell it here in the cab of the header. Are you happy with how the crop's fared?
Yeah, look, there's certainly a fair bit of seed coming into the box, and it's always nice to grow something exotic or different, and it certainly does smell nice, yep.
So, that smells great, I reckon. I can smell it from here. That's primarily because there's fresh coriander in the studio with me, I should hasten to add. That's farmer Fritz Bolton from northwestern Australia, and that report from Matt Brand. And Fritz actually farming and harvesting coriander for the first time in that part of the Ord scheme. John Pyle is the Victorian-based grower of coriander for one of the big supermarkets. He's on the line with us as well. Hello, John.
Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
I'm well. So you would have had some inkling of what Fritz is going through up there in WA, huh?
Oh, absolutely. We grow, we're very sort of, I guess, in the small to medium-sized growers. But we sort of grow all year round for Woolworths, and I can tell you it is very fragrant.
And therein lies the issue, the great dilemma. Now, up in the WA part of the Ord, they were talking there about harvesting, I think, coriander seed, but you do the fresh stuff, do you?
Yes, absolutely. We grow for, basically, it's all in sleeves, harvested, rubber band around it, and it's all hydroponic production. Well, actually, I'll tell a lie. The bulk of it's hydroponic production, and we have a bit of field stuff to back up our low times of the year.
Why? Why do you have to have that diversity between the way you grow it?
Basically, the bulk of our growing here is like I say, hydro, because it's all protected.
Yeah.
We're sort of...
So you have it in greenhouses, do you?
Absolutely. Yep. It's protected cropping rather than hot houses. But we also have to have a little bit of backup for busy times, like as in Christmas. And we have sort of 3 or 4 acres out there, which we can have, you know, half full or full, just depending on the demand.
And I was going to ask you about this. I take it you don't go into this kind of venture unless there is demand. Are you growing and selling as much as you can?
Pretty much, yeah. We started off with a couple hundred square metres, and it was only ever going to be a bit of a hobby, but I had another business at the time. I was a dry cleaner, and my wife worked for a company that was on selling to Woolworths. So we sort of said, well, you know, we've got this bit of a property. Can we do something? And we've ended up, you know, with with it being the mainstream business, and the dry cleaners is, of course, sold.
I love that, John. So you got into sort of full-time farming through coriander.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a rare thing, I reckon, in agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. We've sort of been doing it for 10 or 15 years now, so we've got a bit of a vague idea as to how to do it. But the one thing I will say about it is, as soon as you think you've got it sorted, the season changes or something happens to turn around and trick you a little bit.
So. Yeah, what are some of the pressures on you?
Look, I mean, coriander hates heat, extreme heat, and it hates extreme cold. It can sort of handle it if it's sort of going into it gently, but coriander, as everybody will probably know, is one of those things that you seem to plant and then it bolts straight to seed.
Yes, so, people have been asking me when they heard we were doing coriander on Bush Telly, they said, ask him, how do they stop it going from to seed?
Well, it's basically, you've got to try and keep the stress out of it, which is pretty hard. But really, the only real trick to growing coriander is just to have successive plantings. Just keep planting a little bit every week. It's not one of those plants that you can plant now for 2 or 3 weeks of production. It just doesn't seem to do it.
So it's a fairly labour-intensive exercise then?
Hugely.
Right. I can hear that sigh of resignation in your voice there, John.
Oh, it is, yeah. We have a lot of staff at different times of the year, and you know, from we do all the seeding here into plugs, and then we transplant plugs into hydro beds, and then you've got to harvest it, clean the whole job up, and, you know, do it all over again.
And off you go. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, coriander is one of these divisive herbs. Some people love it, others loathe it. It actually splits your family, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. I've got one son that loves it, and I've got one son that loathes it, and a daughter that's sort of in the middle. And I've got a brother-in-law. We also grow a little bit of salad mix, and a brother-in-law here who will... He just loves our salad mix, and we take it out there to him, and every now and again there'll be... only needs to be a leaf or two in it. And he just gets right cranky, hates the stuff with a passion.
What's the problem?
Well, I don't know. I'm blown if I do. I mean, my partner and myself eat copious amounts of it. You know, I mean, we'll turn around for lunch sometimes and have 2-minute noodles because we're in a hurry, and rip over the hot house and grab a bunch or two of coriander. And really, it's probably a gross overuse of it, but we can't even taste it.
Well, it just means that half your family can't eat Thai food.
Well, yeah, I guess.
and that's their loss, I reckon. John, all the best. I imagine, as you say, Christmas is a bumper time for you. You ready to go for Christmas?
Yep, absolutely. We're planting up now big time, so yeah, we'll be Christmas week. I think we'll be working on spitting out about 30 or 40,000 bunches. So
wow.
That'll be a big week, yeah, for sure.
All the best. Lovely to talk to you.
You too, Michael.
Thanks, mate. John Pyle, who's a Victorian-based grower of coriander, supplying one of the big supermarket chains. Listening into that conversation, well, we have a restaurateur, actually, in the building, a chef, Benjamin, who's going to actually show us what he's made. He's brought in a plate, and I can tell you, the aroma in the studio... Oh, It's hard just to keep my mouth steady. It's drooling everywhere. But Dr. Damien Frank is with me as well. Damien is a research scientist with the CSIRO's Food and Nutritional Sciences. Hello, Damien.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Damien, what the hell is going on with half the population who hates coriander? What's wrong with these people?
Well, you have to be...
There's a loaded question.
Getting your statistics right. You say half the population...
I made that up. I'm in the media.
You made that up, and that can be dangerous. Scientists have to actually get the facts before they spit out a number.
And have you got any facts on coriander?
Look, not specifically on coriander, but there are other... odour compounds for which we know there is quite a lot of variation within the population in terms of their sensitivity to it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the background to that is quite complex, but some...
Well, I want you to talk to me about genetic polymorphism. Tell me all about it.
Okay, well, first of all, for the record, I'm not a genetics expert, but with relation to smell sensitivity, we know that there are about 800 genes which can code for the proteins called olfactory receptors, which are required to actually sense volatile compounds or aroma compounds, in this case from coriander.
Yeah.
And about 400 of them have been shown to be functional, and they sit in the olfactory epithelium in your nose. But we know that human beings are capable of detecting probably hundreds of thousands of different odour molecules from the perfume industry, so trained experts can recognise far more than 400. So the way we think it works is that, you know, we have different levels of tuning of these 400 receptors for different types of molecules.
Yeah.
And that information is synthesised in the brain, and we say, oh, that is a... soapy smell, or that is the smell of roses or violets or what have you.
So what? So whatever parts of our nose are turned on or off could change the very way we perceive, in this case, the smell of coriander. What smells like this glorious perfume to me could smell quite rank to someone else.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there is that effect, and there's a well-known molecule called beta-ionone, which is a breakdown product of carotene. So it occurs widely in flowers and vegetables and orange juice, for example. And they did a study where they used about 200 people that they recruited and did testing for thresholds, and they found that there was a bimodal distribution. So there was one group that could detect it easily at low concentrations, and then another cluster who could detect it at about 500 or 600 times the concentration.
Wow.
And when you get that kind of distribution, a bimodal thing, that kind of suggests that there's one or two genes that are probably, you know, responsible for that difference.
Well, I'm glad I have the right genes, Damien, and I love the way you talk science to us. It kind of gets me hot. So thank you very much indeed. That's Dr. Damien Frank, by the way. He's a research scientist with the CSIRO's Food and Nutritional Sciences. We've talked about the science. We've talked about the growth, or growing and harvesting, of coriander. Let's talk about the eating now. This is my favourite part. With me is Benjamin Cooper, who is a chef at Chin Chin Restaurant. Benjamin, welcome to the program.
Morning.
I understand you use coriander pretty much every day.
Certainly do.
Yeah. Now, Chin Chin is a Vietnamese restaurant?
Thai-based restaurant.
Thai-based.
So the menu is structured entirely around Thai, but we have subtle influences from Malaysia, Vietnam, and Indian influence, as well as some Chinese influence.
So it's sort of Asian fusion.
It's...
Do I not
it's,
say
it's
that?
Authentic Thai.
Yes.
But a lot of people don't realise the impact that the Chinese and the Indians had in Thailand. The Indians sort of came up through the bottom of Southeast Asia into Thailand and had a vast influence on the bottom end of Thailand on their cuisine.
So did coriander come from some other country originally and get to Thailand, or was that where it comes from originally?
Coriander is indigenous to the Mediterranean and Southern Europe.
Right.
And it has a big history in the Mediterranean. In cuisine.
I didn't know that.
It spread from there to Southeast Asia and Latin America, and both those continents tend to use, more often than not, the leaf.
Whereas in your cooking, I understand you use everything, don't
you? Yeah, so in Thai cuisine, they use the seeds for spicing curries.
Yes.
They use the roots in the curry pastes and in spice pastes.
Because it's incredibly pungent, the root, isn't it?
The intensity of the flavour actually comes from the root. So, I mean, here's a bunch of coriander there. If you smell the leaf...
I'm just smelling the leaf. I'm rustling it so you can
hear
it.
But the real fragrance comes from the root.
Whoa,
it's got a really pungent, earthy...
It's a totally different range of smell.
Yeah.
Compared to the leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the roots also don't bruise as easily, so when you are crushing them into a paste, you don't end up with a sort of deterioration of flavour. It really holds the coriander flavour beautifully.
Benjamin, what have you incorporated from the coriander into the dish you've made here?
So this is a kingfish sashimi.
Take us through, because I'm going to take photographs of you while you talk, okay? So you've got a monologue now for a while. Off you go.
All right, so kingfish sashimi, we've dressed it with a green namjim, and the green namjim has both leaf and root of the coriander in it.
Right.
We've then got the kingfish there. We've got coconut cream, lime segments.
Now, the coconut cream is not mixed through. You've actually sort of...
No, it's just little...
Daubed it through, have you?
Daubs over the top. The idea is that as you're eating, different mouthfuls supply different sensations. And then we've garnished that with lime leaf julienne, which is these really fine hair-like strands here, green chili, which is the julienne of the green chili, and we've got Thai basil and chard cress.
Now, I know that for a fact that when you combine certain Asian ingredients with fish, it can actually cook the fish because of the acid within the ingredients. Does that happen with this dish?
Yeah, so this is a... once that paste has been made for the dressing, we then add fish sauce and lime juice to it and a bit of sugar to give it a balance. And the acid in the lime juice is what will cook the fish. So we dress this to order. We plate to order, dress to order, and by the time it's getting to the table, it's just starting to slightly cure the fish, but not enough to have cooked it.
So kingfish, is that the best fish for this kind of dish, or can you use other firm flesh as well?
Kingfish, swordfish, tuna, any other sort of high-fat content, really firm-fleshed fish work very well.
Okay. And I take it that this kind of dish is going to be... I mean, you've got a piece of it here, and we've taken photographs just then. I've taken photographs of Benjamin. I'll put them up online. But I take it we could do this at home, couldn't we?
Certainly could.
Okay, can I have a little try?
By all means,
because you know, that's why we invited you in. Let's be honest.
Enjoy.
You've got two forks here. One is for you.
No, both for you.
Oh, that's what I love to hear. Yeah, you can come back. This is brilliant. Okay, here we go. I'm taking a little piece of this. Just remind us again. On my fork is the kingfish.
Yep. The green Nam Jim. Coconut cream.
Right. Okay. Here we go.
Chili and lime leaf. Oh.
This is why, even now with all the other flavours we have on our cuisines in Australia, Thai still just leads, doesn't it, in some ways? It really does. Fresh. Vietnamese has this too, that sort of freshness, not overcooked. And you can taste everything. Everything.
Yeah. Oh. I've been cooking Southeast Asian for 18 years, and a big part of that is because of the way I feel it fits into our culture.
Yes.
Into our lifestyle, into the climate that we have here. It works.
Did you study in Thailand?
I've travelled through Thailand, travelled through Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong. Mm. But yeah, for me it's a love affair. Thai, Chinese. Chinese is another major culture that uses a lot of coriander, a lot of the leaf. But I mean, you see it right through India, Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Mediterranean.
Everywhere, really.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the only country that it hasn't really had an impact in is Japan, where it's relatively unknown.
Well, that's their loss, but they have lots of other things to make up for it, of course. When it comes to storage of coriander, how do you keep it as fresh as you can?
Okay, so we wrap ours in damp paper and then store in a polystyrene box in the fridge, not in sort of... We saw at a point where it's not getting direct fan contact, so that the temperature variation is very little.
Okay, wrap it up, keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Benjamin, this is just delightful. The strands of chili, the lime, they're all playing a huge role in my mouth at the moment. Thank you for playing such a huge role in the story.
My pleasure.
Benjamin Cooper, chef at Chin Chin. And I'm saying Chin Chin to you. Thank you to the entire Bush Telegraph team for this week, especially to Will and Dave and Kathy and Greg and Kieran and Bell. They all know who they are, and now you do too. Keep those emails and messages coming in. We'll be back on Monday looking at a brand new book. I think it's called The Pastoralist and the Politician. I'm reading it on the weekend. Tell you more about it on Monday. My name's Michael McKenzie. I'll catch you then. See you now.